From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, MBW Digital proudly presents the Oxford Exxon Podcast.
I'd say thanks for tuning in, but why am I going to give you a round of applause for something you're supposed to do, to be frank?
And now, here are your hosts, Chase Palm.
And broadcast school has really paid off.
And Neil McCready.
I deserve to be on TV.
Monday edition of the Oxford Exxon Podcast. Chase Parham, Neil McCready, Clark Ford Studio this morning. Might be the only day this week we're actually in the studio together as we have a bit of travel and things going up, but you will get a podcast most every day, I assume. I'm assuming, but Thursday might be the one day we have some issues this
week. Every day but Thursday, I will be doing a college tour of Auburn on Thursday. I am not enrolling at Auburn. I'm through with college. However, I will be accompanying someone who is taking
after all these years of being accused of being an Auburn fan, here we are. We're taking the trip, doing the tour, doing the whole deal.
This is true. I've been
War Eagle Snuggie will have to come out of the closet at some point.
Self-fulfilling prophecy. You're an Auburn fan.
It's possible you send your kid to Auburn and Jay sends his kid to Ole Miss.
It's possible.
Yeah.
Which is probably going to be proof of what we've been telling customers for 10 years. Which is, we do our jobs the best that we can without emotional attachment.
Got a good show for you today. After a week that, I'll be frank, was a little weak because of the lack of guests and us all over the map, we talking to Mike Dettillier this morning. No one knows football, SEC football especially, better than Mike Dettillier. So you get 30-something minutes with Mike this morning. He was at the Manning Passing Academy over the weekend. We get a lot of Jordan Tamu, a lot of Ole Miss talk, what they need to do to win a couple critical games on their schedule this season. Some New York Giants, some New Orleans Saints, some Drew Locke. You know, we love talking about him positively and negatively here on the podcast. And more with Mike coming up here in a little bit. A show that's brought to you every single day by the Oxford Exxon Highway 6 West. In Oxford, go in, get a daiquiri. You got 8 different flavors to choose from. $3.99 for a small, all the way up to 44 ounces if you so desire. Also, get the Speed Pass Plus by doing that. You download the app to your phone, set it up, and save money in the process. Also, don't have to worry about identity theft or credit card skimmers with Speed Pass Plus. It is safe, it is efficient, and again, saves you money along the way. And again, coming to you from the Clark Ford Studio.
We are Clark Ford's in Amory, Mississippi. 662-257-1900 is the number. Call that number, ask for Corey Clark, tell Corey what new Ford you are looking for. Simple as that. At that point, he will send you a quote, and it's right to the bottom line. There's no haggling. There's no reason to go back and forth and all those things. You're going to get a quote right to the bottom line, and then you can go from there. You can take that quote and shop it if it makes you happy, or you can go right back to Corey and start ironing out your deal. You'll get a great Ford product, great service after the sale. Corey wants to be your car guy, your truck guy. He'll take care of you. He'll prove that to you. At the end of your deal, make it even better. Tell Corey that you heard about Clark Ford on the podcast. Mention any of our family of podcasts. It's $500 off. The bottom line from Clark Ford and Amory, 662-257-1900.
So we get into plenty of football here in a bit on the show. News-wise, not a ton going on still right now. College World Series final starts tonight. It is the Oregon State Beavers and the Arkansas Razorbacks. I might have picked Arkansas to win this thing at the very beginning of the year. I actually need to go back and find that. It was a pretty popular pick. I'm not Nostradamus or anything, but
they're really good.
Yeah, their offense found a way to kind of come to Omaha too, which doesn't always happen for the offensive clubs, but they've hit pretty well over there, and they're relentless 1-9. So Razorbacks, Beavers starting to tonight. Mississippi State has its next baseball coach, Chris Lemonis. The head coach in Indiana, a guy that I've talked about a lot in hypotheticals for post Mike, being a guy that Ole Miss should look at. He's a great recruiter. I don't want to say poor man's, because that's not fair to Chris, but a lesser resumed Cliff Godwin in a way. So there's a lot of similarities there between the two of them. I think he was with Dan McDonald at Louisville for a while. Was the head recruiter on some of those Louisville teams.
Lemonis replaced the guy that coached Schwarber, right?
That is correct, yes. Okay. That guy went to Arizona State, I believe, Tracy Smith. Okay. I think that's where he was. But, you know, they haven't had a ton of success at Indiana. They won the Big Ten before he got there, and they've been good. They were in the number 2 seed in the Austin Regional this year. But he had a good hand in Louisville's being built there for a while. Now, I see some people this morning saying that he did everything. No, Dan McDonald's still the architect of the program, but Chris,
there's so much spin.
You've got to make, yeah, like, it can't just be what it is, right? Like, can you not just let something be what it is?
I didn't do 10 weekend thoughts. Later in the show, I'm going to sort of do an audio version.
Are you?
A real quick audio version of 10 weekend thoughts.
You have 10 in front of you?
I do. They're okay. Very quick, just little notes.
Okay.
But one of them, I'll just tell you, number one is stop digging in. You don't have to just dig in on a side of the argument. The people that go, Lamonis, man, he's the guy that built Louisville. No, he's not. Now, did he play a role in it?
A big role.
Sure.
Yeah.
In the same way that no one person, with the possible exception of Nick Saban, rebuilds a program. It's a multitude of people.
Well, I mean, here, honestly, he did a lot of the same things that Dan did in helping Mike. Different,
yeah.
A different era.
And the
different.
People, and people here do this. Well, the only reason that Ole Miss is successful is because Dan McDonald built it. What? How is that? That's not even conceivable. He's been gone for, what, 10 years? How long has Dan been gone, Chase?
His last year was 2006.
So he's been gone 12
years.
If he was the reason that the program took off, it would have fallen into the sewer by now.
And now, for a little while, it sort of did, but it's because they made a really, really bad hire, and then they picked it back up when they hired Godwin. Ron Studdle was a tragedy. But
And on the other side, the people that with Lamonis will do this, State got their 20th choice. Hold on. I'm going to give John Cohen some credit here. John Cohen did two things that a lot of people can't do in coaching searches. He was not held hostage by the moment.
Because it would have been so easy to just hand Gary the keys.
Oh, so easy. Popular. Everybody would have been waving their cowbell, ringing their cowbell.
Oh, there's probably some people pissed off a little bit today.
Yeah. Buying extra bananas, the whole deal. And I don't mean that as a criticism. It would have been so simple. And secondly, he didn't get flustered, at least publicly, by being publicly turned down. If I'm a Mississippi State fan today, my attitude on this is, if I'm honest, hey, you know what? We went after some big names. We weren't afraid to go after some guys. Yeah, they said no, and that stings a little. But it's the same people that make fun of that are the same ones that'll do this macho thing of, you know, you're never going to make a shot if you don't take it. Okay, well, he took some shots. And then when he missed them, he chilled. He kept taking shots. It's credit that's due there.
Yeah, his only negative is I thought he was too blustery about the whole thing early, where he's bragging about kind of getting one of those guys to certain people and kind of doing that.
Probably because the cat at TCU
had said yes
told
to some
him
degree.
Yes.
But, yeah, no, I agree with you. I mean, I don't know the inner workings. I don't know how he and Gary Henderson coexist. I don't know any of that. No clue. But, yeah, you get credit for going, okay, let's back up, let's regroup. What are we trying to accomplish here, and who's the best guy that we can get at this point
right.
to accomplish that? Okay, because, look.
And this is the name you've
Gary Henderson did a great managing job, but I have no idea what he would do as the general manager of the Mississippi State Bulldogs. There's a difference.
Yeah.
In college baseball, you need a general manager as much as you need a manager.
Cohen, give him credit. Again, obviously looked big picture the whole way. Now, does it turn out that it's a great hire? I have no idea.
We'll find out.
We'll see. But John Cohen did look big picture the whole way. He never got sucked into the moment.
He's another really good baseball coach in a really good conference full of really good baseball coaches. We'll see where that shakes out past that.
Yes.
Don't know.
If you're doing the hot take immediate verdict today on this, I'm just going to tell you there's a coin toss chance that you're wrong.
If he turns out to be really good, I will admit that I can be bought to be a baseball athletic director at any university. I can run coaching searches.
He would have been on your list.
He would have been very high on my list.
Yes.
So when he wins, I'm going to go, hey, look, hey, yeah, just saying, this is where I would have started. So
I'll say this.
Uh-huh.
I didn't watch much of it.
Yeah.
But Carson and I got back to the room on Saturday night, and we saw the end of Oregon State, Mississippi State.
Yep.
Lamonis is inheriting a core group of really talented players Those young guys are good.
He's inheriting a good group. I mean, obviously they were on quite a roll. I mean, this is nuts to me though. And look, again, this is not a knock whatsoever. This is credit to them. But those two breaks, I mean, the difference in conversation we're having today, if Florida State doesn't just bring that kid back. I mean, that is what is amazing about this story. And again, it's not a negative towards State. Credit to them for doing what they were able to do. But the narrative is so different off one pitch. If they go 0-2, there's not these message board threads about who's this program or this program. There's not this. He's inheriting a State team that really just beat a Florida team that had already checked out to even get in the postseason. They go 0-2 in the regional. Oklahoma beat them 20-10. That's going to be a team you've got to build up and put some energy into, and then now all of a sudden you're going. You know, it's funny because the answer's somewhere in the middle. Of course, they're not the number three most talented team in the country, even though they finished third in the country. They're also better than probably the 12-15 before Florida 0-2 deal that could have happened. So
as evidenced by what they did against Florida, Arkansas, Ole Miss, and
9-1 or 10-1 or whatever it was.
I mean, they were sports.
Yeah, I mean, they, as I've said many times, they've been to three super regionals in a row and they won on the road. I mean, that they emphasized and made bigger deals out of the two, or not, they not really bigger deals because it's always been a big deal, but the two things, the two flaws in the Ole Miss program that they have not been able to do, which is to win road, number one, win road regionals. They've never done it. And then two, one super regional in the last 9 years. Those are the two major flaws in State. Has been able to be very, very good at the two things that Ole Miss struggles with.
I don't know whether this is Mangum or people around him or what. I'll give him credit for this. The other night, two outs and nobody on, down four runs or five runs, whatever it was.
It was 5-1.
Those sons of guns still thought they were winning the game.
Well, they loaded the bases, had a dude on, had a dude on it,
and hit a, and the shortstop almost got it stuck in his webbing. And I'm going to tell you, they were one or two hitters away from, whoa. My point
is, I wasn't watching. I didn't actually have it on television, but I was following on Twitter. And, yeah, as they kept getting guys on base, I was going, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God. Like, because, I mean, it even kind of hit me a little bit. I kept expecting that next dude to hit a ball in the dang gap, and then here we go.
Because I think Mangum was on deck.
And you don't want that.
And I was like, man, that dude gets up. My money's on him.
Yeah,
so my point is that that team had a mental toughness to it, a grit to it that's undeniable. And people can talk about bananas and all that crap. They were really a gritty team.
Yeah, the bananas was an example. It was a symptom of their looseness and their grit.
Sure, they were gritty. They fought.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, there are certain college players that do bring that out of their team in key moments, and he appears to be one of those. I mean, I know he hit like 380 or 390, but it felt like he was hitting 820 at times. And
yeah, they play with a lot of emotion. The little bit that I watched of them, they were kind of fun to watch.
I know that's
sacrilegious to say on this podcast, but I liked their kind of brand of baseball.
I mean, in 14, Ole Miss kind of had one of those guys. I mean, Will Allen wheeled Ole Miss to wins in 14 and kind of carried them a little bit. I mean, yeah, you run across those type of players in college baseball, and they get things done. So
yeah.
We'll see. We move into the off season now for sure. A couple more college baseball games left. I give Arkansas the edge in this one. They've got their pitching rotation completely set, whereas Oregon State's had to play a couple extra games and do some different things. So I'll stick with the Hawks for the week to get one for Dave Van Horn. But
I'll go Arkansas in three. Based on absolutely nothing.
You don't think anybody sweeps?
No, Oregon State's pretty good.
They are.
That shortstop's a pretty good player. Their pitching's pretty good.
You know, their head coach didn't get to the postseason for like the first 10 years of his tenure.
Took him some time, is what you're saying?
Yeah.
So he didn't. I'm trying not to make fun of people right now.
Well, I mean, no, there really wasn't even an implication on anything.
No,
it's just fascinating in a lot of ways, and it's also a sign of the time changes. You know, when he took that job, baseball wasn't the instant gratification sport that it is now. Obviously, Oregon State didn't have some of the resources that they have now. And
I'll tell you one thing, man. That kid for Oregon State, I'm not getting into his case. I don't know enough about it, and it's disturbing. the one who pled guilty to
Luke Heimlich.
Luke Heimlich, thank you. The Royals let it get out that they are contemplating signing him.
I saw that.
And the backlash in Kansas City.
Well, they let it out because they wanted to see, right?
Yeah. Oh, sure. Let's take the beating without doing it, where we can come back and go, hey,
we didn't do anything. What are you talking about? Him.
We explored it. We did our due diligence. Relax. And internally go, whoa, let's get away from that. It is how that kid, for just a minute, I'm going to look at it, this thing from this kid's perspective, for just 1 minute. How that kid focuses on baseball. How he can, because pitching is hard. How he can, that must be his sanctuary. That must be the only place he can go to escape it all. How he can do that is beyond me. I don't have the personality.
So does he? Is he on a minor league roster in a month? Yes or no?
Based on what I've seen out of Kansas City, I'm going to say no.
Okay.
I'm going to say.
So his career is over.
I'm going to guess unless he can go to Japan and play or something.
He will never play in the States, in your opinion. I know you hate the word never. But
I hate the word never. I'd bet against it.
Would you really? Okay.
I don't know that.
It's what's crazy about baseball because, like I said, football or basketball, he's on a roster. He's too impact to not be.
Yeah. I agree. It's fascinating, really. I don't know.
So check this out. This is kind of funny. Real quick. Pat Casey, head coach of Oregon State.
Yes.
Known as one of the top five coaches in the country, whatever you want to make.
He's a nervous cat in that dugout, man.
Yeah. So here's how this happened. And tell me the number of programs, even in the 90s, that would have stuck through this. So they hired Pat Casey at Oregon State in 1995, or 94, I guess. 95 was his first season. And his head coaching experience to that point had been 7 seasons as the head coach at George Fox, an NAIA school, in the Cascade Conference, whatever that is. Okay? That's it. That was his head coaching experience. At Oregon State, he had some decent years early, was okay. And then here in 1999 starts a stretch. You ready?
Okay.
Here's his Pac-12, Pac-10 record in 1999 through 2004. 7-17, 9-15, 11-13, 10-14, 7-17, and still came back for a 10-14 season in a row. Still got the gig. And then in 2005, he goes to the College World Series, and in 2006 and 2007 wins the dang thing back to back. What happened?
I don't know.
10 seasons in after about 6 in a row of sucking.
Sports?
But, I mean, I'm sure somebody's written the story. I'm sure somebody will go, Shakes, here's 1,000 links. That AD, how are you not firing the guy at any point there and going, well, this isn't working? And the answer is the program probably has always sucked, and what difference does it make because it's a non-revenue sport and we're just treading water?
Well, and it might also be that deal where if you're watching from the inside, you can see the progress.
After a 7-17 in year 9.
But maybe it looked different.
Okay.
I can tell you this. In 2014, when the Cubs were really bad on the field, I saw the progress.
Well, there's a little bit of that, even like the Braves last year. They looked different, even though.
I would hear Braves fans bitching. I'm like, man, you guys are like so on the cusp of being really good.
Just chill.
Oh, you're right there.
The hard part's over.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, there were moments in 2014. Ironically, it happened in Cincinnati when Anthony Rizzo almost got in a fight with the whole Reds bench, where I said, oh, man, this is good times are coming.
So, I don't know. Fascinating. I mean, Pat Casey, just his entire resume, his entire deal is crazy to me. But anyway, nonetheless, we will go to Mike DeTillier in a second. Before we do that, tell you the podcast is brought to you in part by MasterCuts Lawn and Landscape, 662-607-7773, mastercutslawn.com, yard aeration, landscaping, even outdoor living areas, outdoor kitchen installation. They do all those different things to help you out and make the yard the best it can be. So give them a call. Tell them you heard about it on the podcast. They will hook you up. They will help you out. 662-607-7773.
The podcast also brought to you by Lauren Valick Ferris with Briggs Freeman Sotheby's in the Dallas DFW Metroplex. Give her a call. It's 469-867-1734. Go to her site, laurenandkelly.com. Lauren is consistently ranked as a top agent producer in D Magazine. She was recently named a 2017 Advocate Top 10 Realtor in the Lakewood, East Dallas area. If you're moving home, you're buying, you're selling, or referring a friend in one of the hottest housing and job markets in the country, you need a realtor who knows the Metroplex, and that is Lauren. Again, 469-867-1734. Podcast also brought to you by Gambrell and Associates. Gambrell and Associates have three attorneys with more than 60 years of combined experience, more than 45 years handling only bankruptcy and Social Security disability claims. Check out their site, msbnkr.com, or by searching for Robert Gambrell on superlawyers.com or avvo.com. You should know Super Lawyers only selects the top 5% of lawyers in the state, so you know you're getting a good one when you get Gambrell and Associates. They handle Social Security disability claims statewide and in Memphis. For more information, check out, call the office in Hernando, 662-342-7700, or in Oxford at 662-281-8800. Podcast also brought to you by Grenada Nissan. If you're in the market for a Nissan vehicle, Grenada Nissan is the place to go. It's just off I-55 in Grenada. They have a complete selection of new and previously owned Nissans, great lease deals. It's phenomenal customer service. Their service department is spectacular. You'll love doing business with the people at Grenada Nissan. It's GrenadaNissanUSA.com. And Rebel Nation, 2018 is the year of the fan. Ole Miss Athletics wants to showcase your stories and recognize you, the Ole Miss fan base. Exciting prizes and experiences throughout the year will be featured on omyearofthefan.com and updated often, so be sure to visit omyearofthefan.com.
Now, Mike, TA on the Billy's Pecans Hotline.
Mike, thanks for being with us here on this Monday morning. Really appreciate the time. I know you were down in Thibodaux at the Manning Passing Academy. You go every year, and I'm always fascinated to sort of read and hear some of your observations, because the last few years you've sort of nailed it. I'll start here. I get the impression, just from kind of looking on Twitter, I was in Cincinnati all weekend, so I was pretty much out of pocket, but it looked like you were really impressed with Drew Lock at Missouri.
Yeah, you know, Thibodaux is about a 10-minute drive from my house, so it's not bad to get there every day. And thing about Drew Lock was, on Thursdays, when the counselors come in, they have a session in the afternoon with the Mannings, with Peyton and Eli and Archie kind of overseeing. This year, Andrew Luck and Mike Shanahan were also there to watch, where they throw to the college receivers. And what impressed me so much about Locke was that he's just arriving, and he's throwing to receivers he's never worked with before. These are receivers from Nicholls State and Southeastern and Tulane and LSU. And I thought, with Drew having watched him at Missouri, that it would be more of a Patrick Mahomes type deal or Josh Allen, where you'd see that fireball, man, the ball's coming out of there because he's got a really strong arm. But you know, it'd be a lot of maybe some erratic moments, especially working with receivers you haven't worked with. He was dead on. I mean, it was impressive for a guy who had, you know, kind of basically been a career like 57% passer. And that caught my eye, because this is the 13th year I've watched the kind of throw off with the college counselors. I've never seen anybody that accurate throwing the ball in here. The only thing that I can remember that was close was Matt Stafford back in 08, where he started the same way, got out of the car and ate lunch and went work out, and it was very similar. But, boy, Drew Lock threw it extremely well. Great accuracy skills. He showed off that real strong arm. And I got to talk to him the Friday, and he just told me he was in the groove. He was just pitching it. And so he threw the football extremely well, and I was – really, really impressed with that. And every year I try to make a note of a guy that kind of can do that. And that's a lot of skill when you have that sort of rapport with guys that you've never worked with. And so the guy that stuck out certainly was Drew Locke. I would have loved to have seen Jake Fromm. Now, he came in later and wasn't able to participate. I was able to watch him and on Friday and Saturday throw the football, and he was impressive also. But Drew Locke, that was something that I hadn't seen at the Manning camp, how accurate he was throwing the ball, and also he certainly showed off that real strong arm that he has.
I don't say this to blow sunshine. I say it as a true statement. I don't know too many people that know what the NFL is looking for more than you do. In terms of him being an NFL prospect, obviously he's going to get an opportunity in the league, but just how high of a draft choice does he have the potential to be?
The first one. I mean, he's got a chance to be the top overall pick in 2019. There's some defensive lineman there that's going to give him some push, certainly with Ed Oliver from Houston and Bosa at Ohio State. But, you know, quarterbacks are premium. And I work with five of them every football season. And the one thing they all agree on, quarterbacks trump every position. And they're right. And Drew Locke could well end up being the top overall pick. He's got a little bit of filling out to do. He's got a long, lean frame. And I thought he was built more along the lines of Jared Goff. Now, he's a little taller than Goff, but and I think he's got a little stronger arm. But I think he's got a shot to be the top pick in the draft. He's that good. You know who this gets a lot of pressure on is Derek Dooley, the new offensive coordinator at Missouri. Man, you've been given the keys to the Maserati here. You can't wreck it. And so Locke certainly stood out. I thought him and Jake Fromm threw the football throughout the weekend. I thought they threw the football better than anybody here. And so it was impressive to watch both of them throw the ball, but I think Locke's got a chance to be the top overall pick.
Jordan Tamu from Ole Miss was there as well. I don't know how much you got a chance to look at him. What were your impressions?
Well, I got to talk to him quite a bit Friday. In fact, he did a TV interview with me, so I was impressed with him. You know, one of the things he brought up to me was that how much time he spent this offseason, because I always ask him, what have you really worked on the most? And he said, a lot of film work. He said, I thought that was something that I needed to get a lot more work on. He said, I spent a lot of time in the film room kind of breaking down what was happening out on the field, kind of where some of the pressures were coming from. You know, he understands the offensive part of the game really, really well. But I think he wanted a better grasp of kind of where that pressure would come from defensively and the sort of coverages you're going to get. Now, I will say this. We did radio Friday afternoon, and we got a chance to see AJ and Metcalf work. And old buddy Deuce McAllister probably put it best. We saw those two big Ole Miss wide receivers working out, and Deuce turned to me and he said, Mike, if they get any bigger, they'll be playing defensive end. And I thought that was a great line by Deuce that, you know, you understand when you have that type target and also DeMarcus Lodge coming back, you know, you just got to put it in the spot and they're going to go up and go get it. But I was his demeanor, Jordan, and his work ethic. And he talked about, I came here because of the fact that, I wanted to learn a lot more about what it takes away from the football field to get me better. The film work, the study, the work habits. And he said, I think that when you look at Peyton Manning, everybody, and Eli, everybody brings up about, you know, the championships they've won or the records they have. But he said, you know, a lot of it has to do with they enter the game sort of relaxed. And he said, you know, a lot of that is because of preparation. And I thought that was interesting that he brought that up. That, you know, he wanted to be as much prepared as he could each week to face an opponent. and he thought coming to the Manning camp would help him in learning from the Mannings on what it took to be that better studier away from the game. You know, and you don't hear that a lot. You know, some of them talked about, you know, their footwork and you know, technique and leadership and that sort of thing. But he was much more interested in, I think, trying to get some osmosis from them on what it took, you know, to get himself mentally better to play each and every week.
Yeah, it's funny you say that because one of the knocks I kind of had on him last season was at the beginning of games, I thought he was – it's easy for me to say. The next snap I take in front of 70,000 people will be my first. But I always thought he was a little wide-eyed early. He had to kind of settle into a game. He was like a starting pitcher that, you know, if you could get through the first inning, you were going to be okay, but that was an if. I always thought that was kind of my knock on him. It just took him a little while to get settled in, and some of that might be what you just referenced.
Yeah, it could well be. And, again, you know, he brought up the fact that along with Khalil Tate from Arizona, about, you know, you have to be ready because neither one of them were starters to start the season. It took an injury for them to get there. And he said, you know, you don't realize what it is to prepare as a starter and to prepare as a backup. Now, you can say, and a lot of them say, well, oh, I prepare each week like I'm going to be the starting guy. How much of that is actually true? You know, sometimes somebody might just be able to say that. So I thought Jordan has put it in the best perspective here, that he understands what he needs to get better at. And that's, you know, an ability to get himself relaxed, ready to go, and it not start for him at the beginning of the second quarter, but the game start for him at the beginning of the first. And he felt that that was all about getting himself more mentally prepared and spending a lot more time in the film room.
You mentioned Eli Manning. I'm gonna get back to some college guys in a second, but I'm curious. I was listening, again, when you drive from Cincinnati to Oxford in the middle of the night, you'll listen to anything. And there was some talk about the Giants and some of their mini camps and how Eli seemed a little more relaxed, a little more prepared, a little more kind of focused. I know long-term there will always be a debate about whether the Giants did the right thing taking Saquon Barkley at number two. For the short term, how does that help, if at all, Eli Manning here in the twilight of his career?
Because he's never had a back like him. I mean, when you got a guy that can take some pressure off of you and you don't have to throw the football 45 times in a game, that's immense for an older quarterback. We see it here in New Orleans with Drew Brees. To have that tandem of Alvin Kamara and Mark Ingram is going to extend his career. And I think Eli feels the same way with Saquon Barkley. Now, a lot of that has to do with what the Giants didn't. They spent early picks on linemen, but a lot of those guys didn't work out. And, you know, they've went out in free agency and picking up a guy like Nate Solder to come in to help out. So I think, you know, if I'm Eli and I got a new left tackle that can protect my blind side, and I got a guy like Saquon Barkley who can come in and certainly take the pressure that I don't have to throw the football 45 times in a game, and the fact that I'm getting Odell Beckham back healthy, I can understand why he would be, you know, a more relaxed guy, because you put in that spot where everything's predicated on how well you play, and you got to carry all that water. So I would certainly understand that. And it's something Peyton even has brought up, the fact that, you know, he was so fortunate throughout most of his career in that, you know, it was Marshall Faulk, it was Zetterin James. You know, those guys took pressure away from him that he didn't have to throw the football. Now, like you said, in some games you have to because you end up being in a shootout. But to have that sort of running back talent around you does extend the career of players. The only guy, I don't know, you know, man, that training and whatever, can say that he did it, and he did it without a great running game, is Tom Brady. You know, you look at the backs he's had throughout the years. Now, that may change this year, but look what they did in the offseason. They go out and get Jeremy Hill, and they select Sony Michel. Isn't it coincidental? Toward the end of his career now, they're going out and trying to beef up the backfield because they know that, you know, they can't rely on him to do that game in, game out. It's just too much pressure today in today's game. You got to have some balance. So I understand exactly why Eli would feel the way he does and being, you know, a little bit kind of relieved that he's got that big time back. And even more important, to have some guys up front that can protect him, and especially on his blind side, and bringing in a guy like Nate Solder, and who understands that perfectly, coming from a team that he had to protect Tom Brady.
Can the Giants be competitive in 2018? I mean, do they have a little bit of a window left in Eli's career?
Yeah, I think they do. Defensively, they've got some talent on that football team. They were just put out on the field way too long last year. They had a ton of injuries on offense. But, you know, if you can't score and you're constantly being put out there, you know, eventually you're gonna crack. And that's what you saw happen to that Giants football team. In a division now, when you look at that NFC East with a really good Dallas Cowboy team, and the Eagles are the world champs defending, and who knows what you're going to get from the Redskins, but I think they're going to be a solid football team because they've almost been like that's becoming SEC Northeast with the collection of players they've drafted the last couple years with a Jonathan Allen, a Ryan Anderson, a Darius Geis. You can kind of go on and on with it. They've been able to kind of accumulate that talent. And Alex Smith has been a really good regular season quarterback. So that's going to be a tough, tough spot for the Giants. I think they'll certainly be much more competitive than they were a year ago. And you also have a year of development with Evan Engram at tight end that also help out Eli on the offensive side of football.
Take a break in our talk with Mike. Today, the podcast is also brought to you in part by Community Mortgage, Oxford, Memphis, Seto County, and Chattanooga. All underwriting and processing is done in Memphis. Streaking local underwriting understands your market, a leader in condo financing, and the float down option, which allows you to lock in the current rate. But if rates go down before you close, you get that lower rate. 662-234-2704 or JLOWE at communitymtg.com.
The podcast is also brought to you by Oxford University Bank. OUB is locally owned and operated right here in Oxford. When you deposit money at OUB, that money and the vast majority of the bank's profits go right back into the Oxford community. OUB gives you the comfort of home and all of the benefits the big mega banks provide, all the technology and products you can want, all with the personal touch. When you call OUB, you speak directly with a live person, all without having to press 10 buttons, all without a 5-minute wait. OUB offers its customers the absolute best cash checking account. It's called Kasasa. And with Kasasa, OUB will pay customers 2.5% interest on their balances up to $50,000. With Kasasa, ATM fees nationwide are refunded. OUB also offers online bill pay and mobile check deposit using its online app. To learn more about OUB, check out liveoxfordbankoxford.com or call 662-234-6668. OUB is FDIC insured. The podcast also brought to you by 7 South Tailgating. 7 South celebrating 10 years of business this season. Try 7 South once, you'll never tailgate without them again. They'll set up your own personal gear or you can rent everything from them. They have packages for one game, for SEC games, for all the games. Get in touch with Kyle Thornton and the people there at 7 South Tailgating. No one will match their customer service or their attention to detail at 7southtailgating.com. Now back to Mike Dettillier on the Billy's Pecans Hotline.
You mentioned the Saints in passing a minute ago. What are kind of the variables or things you're looking for that will kind of swing them either way this season?
One, you know, first of all, it starts with number nine staying healthy because as you get up in age, the one thing that happens if you have even a minor injury, something that might have taken a couple days, now may take a week or so to come back. So his health is paramount, but Drew trains like an Olympic athlete. And so you know what you're going to get out of him. I think the keys here for this football season for the Saints, one is going to be what type of talent depth can they develop along their defensive line? Because I think the world of Ryan Nielsen as a defensive line coach, I thought last year you saw what he was able to do with those young defensive linemen, and Cam Jordan had the best season of his career, you know, working under Ryan. And now you've kind of got a new group now with Marcus Davenport as the first-round pick. Mitchell Lowen, who was a guy that he brought up to me at the because we kind of back-to-back with all this with offensive-defensive line camp at Nichols also, that he brought up Mitchell to me as a guy that he thought could really turn into a real solid football player. With Trey Hendrickson, with Al-Qaeem Muhammad, David Onyemata now entering that third year, with Sheldon Rankins, and hopefully you get back a healthy Alex Okafor. I think despite the fact, you know, you got to have the quarterback, and that's first and foremost. I think nothing wins games more in the fourth quarter than a pass rush. And now you've got, you know, some depth at the defensive position that's the hardest to get, and that's along the defensive line. And secondly, jump in the mental ditch. That final game, final play, you've got to get over that. You can say, oh, that's easy. The people that tell you that, ask them about bad incidents that happened in their life. If it's something that happened at work or in their personal relationships, ask them how easy that is to get over that mentally. It's difficult. People might say, oh, I just, you know, I get over that real quick. Yeah, right. It stays in your mind. We saw last year what happened with Atlanta. After blowing that big lead in the Super Bowl, they seemed to be almost like a dog in wet grass at times. It took them a little while to finally get over that and piece it together late. But, it, you know, there's always that thing in the back of your mind. And what happens when you get a game that's real close and a team's driving late? How many times are you going to see that play shown over and over and over again with Marcus Williams? So I think those two elements, the develop of the defensive line and jumping that emotional mental ditch of losing that game to the Vikings the way they did, and that's something Sean Payton's going to have to get the big, eraser out to try to, just put it aside and move on. It's a lot easier said than done, because I've talked to coaches who have been through incidents, not like that because that was unique, but have been through something similar, and they tell you, you know, it lingers on the football team.
Yeah, still lingering on me just as a fan, trust me. Let's take the running back conversation back to college for a second. You mentioned A.J. Brown, D.K. Metcalf, Jordan Tamu. Jordan Wilkins probably undervalued to a lot of people on what he was able to give Ole Miss last year. They don't have a returner that has considerable snaps. It looks like going into the fall, Scotty Phillips, the junior college transfer, is probably the most likely number one back. What do they need out of him just to be able to operate the offense at the level that is needed?
You probably need from him 90 yards a game rushing. I think you got to average somewhere in that range, because I think you're going to understand that now you've got an off season where teams going against Ole Miss understand what they're going up against. That receiving core is as good as what anyone has in college football, and so now you got to balance that a little bit. And I'm a big believer in this, that you got to be able to find a way to run the football when you need to and have to. And so I think to average that, you know, that big back that they have, to average around 90 yards a game is imperative, because you're going to spread the field out with those receivers. You should be able to one-on-one and block those guys up front, and he's got some big holes to run through. Because you got to pick your poison here on what you want to do defensively. Because if you're going to try to match up receiver-wise, if I'm Ole Miss, what I do, I spread you out, and it's going to give me some lanes here. And defensively, somebody's got to pick a guy they're going to have to double cover. So now I got some spots here to run the ball. And so I've always been a big believer that your number one back, he has got to be in that 90 yards plus range, because you're going to get some great opportunities with those receivers and the offense they have to be able to put up those type numbers. And when you have a lead, to be able to put a team away, running the ball, run the clock. You can use the short pass like an extended handoff, but you know, late in games, I think you got to have that ability to run the ball. And so for Ole Miss, I think that's the big question mark on offense. Can they have that consistent running game like what Jordan game last year? Because again, defensively, you're not loaded down on the defensive side of the football. So you're going to play in a lot of shootout games, a lot of games where, you know, you may have a lead late and you're going to try to eat some of that clock away. The running game is your best help.
If this football thing doesn't work out for you, you can go into politics, because that was a very diplomatic description of Ole Miss's defense. That was impressive.
Yeah, I think that in comparison to other teams in the Southeast Conference, you know, they're not going to be able to match up talent and depth-wise to a team like a Mississippi State, an LSU, Alabama. You know, those type teams, even A&M, I don't know about depth at A&M, but talent with their starting front seven is better than what Ole Miss has. So you're stuck in a situation where you know probably 80% of the time in the SEC, in those type games, you are going to be in a track meet, and you're going to have to outscore them. Or the other part is to come up with turnovers in the secondary. That means pressure. That means you got to be able to affect the passer. That's the unknown for me with Ole Miss. How much can they affect the opposing quarterback's throws? Because I think no matter if it's in college football or in professional football, that part of the game is so much emphasis on it today, because you can't get the edge rushers anymore. Those guys are few and far between. They play in receiver and tight end today. And when you got one, you got gold. Just look at last year's draft's a great example. Bradley Chubb is the only top 10 pass rush defensive end. Look what the Saints gave up to get the number two guy and Davenport. Look what they gave up. That tells you that the numbers aren't there. You can get interior people. That you can still find, and in huge numbers. But does Ole Miss have that type of talent along that defensive front to affect the passer each and every week? That still remains to be seen. Can they do it?
We haven't talked to you, and I know you're probably running out of time. We haven't talked to you since LSU added Joe Burrow, the transfer from Ohio State. How does he change the equation there?
Well, he didn't come here to hold a clipboard. You know, he's here to be the guy. And if Ed Orgeron was thrilled with what he saw in the spring game, why did he go out and get Burrow? I mean, that's real easy to answer. Joe was a guy that, you know, sometimes circumstances catch you. You know, he got caught behind JT Barrett at Ohio State, who was a leader for them, a guy that won a ton of games. When he had a chance, you know, in the spring, you know, in the summer of last year, you know, he breaks his hand. And Haskins gets all those reps against Michigan. Haskins comes in and he makes a ton of plays when JT goes down. And so he knew he had to leave. This is tailor-made for Joe to come in to take over. What I can't tell you is how quickly the rapport between Joe Burrow and the LSU receivers and tight ends, when that will happen. You know, because he's walking in now with no work with any of these guys in the spring. None. So now all of a sudden, you know, the baton is basically in his hand. He's got to make the play. But, you know, I know a lot about him, know his dad. Certainly remember when he played, and dad being a former coach, he understands this game extremely well. He's very talented. He gives LSU something they have not had probably since Zach Mettenberger, and that is a guy that can throw the short to intermediate routes. Last quarterback since Zach, they haven't been able to do that. And Danny Etling couldn't do it. Either the pass was real short or real long. Nothing in the intermediate part of the game. So, you know, this job is Joe Burrow's. Listen, Ogeron and LSU can say what they want about it's an open competition. I think he had the open competition, and none of them took control. Miles Brennan didn't. Lowell Narcisse didn't. Justin McMillan, probably of the three, looked the best. And I'd be surprised in August if Justin Millen is still on this roster. Because I think Justin, you know, he's going to graduate, and I think he's going to transfer to another school. So it's huge for, I think the two things for LSU this season that will make or break at Ogeron will be the development of Joe Burrow at quarterback. And can Cole Tracy become the consistent kicker that they have also lacked the last few years? The Notre Dame game was a perfect example of they get down inside the 25-yard line three times in the first half and come away with 0 points. Come on, you got to have a kicker that can kick a 30-yard and minus kick. I mean, come on, you got to have that in this league. And I'm not talking about getting a Daniel Carlson. I'm just talking about getting a guy who's consistently being able to hit those field goals. I think that's going to make or break Ogeron. Can Cole Tracy be the guy? Can Joe Burrow be the guy?
Last thing, Mike. You know, when we look at Ole Miss, we were talking about last week that Texas Tech's kind of Daytona for them. If you don't get that one, it's hard to put a bunch in the win column just when you're guessing the season. And then the other one that kind of sticks out is Arkansas in year one under Chad Morris, because the game's in Little Rock. It's at least seemingly gettable for Ole Miss. How do you kind of handicap those two, even though we're a good ways out for the Rebels?
Well, take the over on the Ole Miss Texas Tech game. I mean, come on. That one's going to be a shootout at the OK Corral. You know, I don't think either defense is going to be able to stop one another the way they throw the football. So, you know, again, you've got to be able to, when you have opportunities to come up with turnovers, when you throw the football that much, you're going to get some shots. It's all going to be about coming down with that big turnover late in the game to win it. But Arkansas, it's an interesting football team because, I mean, you know, Chad's offense is totally different from what we saw with Bielema. You know, because he wanted to run the ball. You know, he wanted to get the biggest lineman he could get and kind of lean on you and wear you out. Well, you know, with Morris, you know, he wants to pitch and catch it. So that's still a work in progress. I got to watch Cole Kelly here throwing the football, and he's a Louisiana kid, and he's a big man, and he's got a rifle. But he's, even in practice and watching him, highly erratic throwing the football. He'll throw a couple of really nice throws, and then he's off. And when he's off, he's high on his throws, which tells you one thing, doesn't have his feet set. And so can they, you know, again, come up with that big turnover against Arkansas? I'm interested with Chad because that team isn't built to throw the football 50 times a game. They're really still a run-oriented type team. How well he can blend that in, what he wants to do offensively, and yet the personnel you have is more of on the run-oriented side. But, again, neither one of them, you know, this isn't an all-star game for defensive players. So it's going to come down to turnovers for both teams. Who can come up with that big turnover, you know, late to kind of break the other team's back?
All right, this is truly the last thing. There's been a lot of pressure on me applied by Chase and others over the last several years for not having an NFL team. I'm trying on the Chicago Bears for size. I'm a Cubs fan. It makes some sense. All I know about is Trubisky. I know nothing really about the rest of the team other than I do like the new orange jerseys. If I'm trying on the Bears for the first time, am I going to be disappointed in year one, or is there a chance that, there's going to be a little bit of a race?
I think they're a really tough football team. They play really great defense, and that's going to keep them in a lot of games. And Howard at running back takes a lot of pressure off of Mitchell Trubisky. The big question mark is, can they throw the football when they need to and have to? It's kind of the opposite, you know, of some of these teams that are in shootout games, that the Bears can run the ball, and their center-guard combination is really good. Can they protect Mitchell? And they've added some weapons for him on the offensive side of the football with Allen Robinson and Trey Burton. But is it enough for Mitchell? I think they're a middle-of-the-road team in the NFL, meaning I think they're a 6-7-win type football team. But they're going to be in every game because their defense is going to keep them in every game. Their front seven is really, really good, and they can put a lot of heat on the quarterback. And, you know, their offense, they're going to run the ball, and they can run it. And they do use the running back coming out of the backfield like an extended handoff. But in that division, when you think about a healthy Aaron Rodgers, what the Vikings have, which, I mean, I think 1 through 53, the Vikings may have the most talented roster in pro football as of today. And that's a paper comment, but that's all you have to work on. And the Lions have Matt Stafford, and they'll be better on defense. I don't think they can be too much worse, but that's going to be tough for the Bears to come out of that with more than 7 wins, just because of, you know, you figure that's 6 games that they've got to play, and that's going to be tough.
Mike, I really, really appreciate your time as always, and maybe we'll get you again before we get started for football season.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Thanks to Mike for joining us today. Insightful as always. As I told Neil, we're going to play some games with him in the future. We just test the depth of his knowledge. I have a feeling he's going to pass. But anyway, as we continue the podcast today, the podcast is also brought to you by Tyson Drugs. TysonDrugs.com is the website. They also have a great app and are located there in Holly Springs. Give them a call, 662-252-2321. They deliver wherever you are. Fill out the forms online. Don't have to speak to anybody. Just give me a doctor's name. Get prescriptions ready and to you. They're also now in Oxford with G&M Pharmacy on South Lamar, and they deliver local in the Oxford area.
Mike Dettillier and all guests join us on the Billy's Pecans Hotline. Been telling you for a while, it's almost the 4th of July. It's in a week. Heading down to the beach, maybe. You're getting stuff ready for your summer. Maybe you're starting to think about stuff for your tailgate. Billy's Pecans probably needs to be on your list. Their cinnamon spice pecans are fantastic. If you prefer a more savory taste, check out the toasted pecans. Remarkably good. And if you're just into sweet, they'll take care of that as well. Dark chocolate, white chocolate, chocolate amaretto, chocolate Grand Marnier. They have gift bag assortments. If you want to try a little bit of everything, you can do that as well. They've got the Cheese Krispies. They've got so much there. Just check it out, billyspecans.com. Or call 1-800-624-7404.
Little quick recommendation. I've been running through some true crime stuff on Netflix. Evil Genius was excellent. I don't know if you've seen that or anything about
not.
It. Looks at a bank heist case from a good while ago. Really, really well done. I was impressed there. Also tried The Staircase. Couldn't get into that as much because it was filmed in like 2001 or 2002, and they've really elevated how well a lot of those documentaries, true crime shows are done in the last 15 years or so. But Evil Genius, if you can get past just obviously the nature of the show, Neil, I think you would enjoy it, but you probably need to be in the right mood, I'll tell you.
Okay.
It's a little, it can get a little little dark there at a moment or two. And I know you worry a little about the dark, so.
Yeah, this is talking to someone who is now, I guess, 3 episodes into Arrested Development Season 5.
Not the same genre for these two. So, You know, I never could get into it. Everybody like makes fun of me and stuff, but I just couldn't.
Well, you do have to give it a lot of time to sort of get in, and it's so stupid.
See, it's just not my thing. Like, the stupid stuff I cannot get into. Like, any kind of slapstick, just not my deal.
I think what I like about it is the writing is genius.
Yeah.
Some of the stuff that they do is so funny. I mean, the different characters and the playing off stereotypes and... You know me, I sometimes get really irritated at political correctness.
Yeah. Because so you enjoy anything that'll kind of poke it a little.
Yeah. they don't poke it. They just take knives.
Sledgehammers.
Yes. They rip political correctness to death, and yet at the same time they stand up for it in some ways. It's just it's a lot of nuance to it. It's really funny. The writing is fantastic, and how they get I wish I could watch the outtakes because I don't know how they make it through some of the stuff without just dying. I'd be in the fetal position laughing at some of it.
I'll give you the floor. What do you got?
So I kind of have 10 thoughts here. People always say
you have literally 10.
I do.
So you're not going to like recite a drink of the week or something?
Nope, no drink of the week. Jonathan got the week off. I got home last night a little after 11.
Is it that late?
It was late.
Wow, okay.
Nashville traffic.
So it took you every bit of six that we were talking about then.
Oh, yeah.
Because I talked to you around Louisville when I said, yeah, you got six left.
Yeah, we had a full six. Nashville traffic's bad. Construction on the interstate, which I know is a requirement, there's nothing you can do about it, but that slows things down
right
dramatically. I'll give credit. If you're going to work on I-40 around the Jackson, Tennessee area, doing it at night is a service to the taxpayer. So thank you. But that slowed me down going into – I was in the 30-mile-per-hour range getting through Jackson. So okay. I had some time. All right, so one, I've already touched it.
Yeah.
You notice on message boards people digging in.
And media in some extent as
well. Media digging in. There are very few stances that you can truly dig in on without at least acknowledging the other side. You can feel strongly about an argument and yet acknowledge that the other side might have a talking point.
Is this the same conversation as the let's have context and complete understanding of what we're reading too, or is that a different conversation?
Because it's similar.
Okay.
It's like this.
Because it's like the guy goes, you said this. I'm like, no, that's not at all what I actually said. You took what I said and then put this hyperbolic spin on it to suit this way out there thing that...
You mentioned, here's points 2 through 4.
Okay.
Number 2, you can be for Matt Luke. You can be a diehard Matt Luke supporter. In fact, you probably should. He's a hell of a good guy, and he's working his butt off. And yet at the same time, acknowledge that it was a coaching search that was probably ended as a result either of emotion and or politics. You can acknowledge both. It's okay. You can say, hey, probably wasn't the direction the search was going, but you know what? I'm going to support Matt Luke. Supporting Matt Luke doesn't make if you and you can be critical of the search and still support the result of the search. Does that make sense? You don't it's along the same things. You don't have to dig in one side or the other. There's truth in the middle. Kermit Davis, you can support Kermit Davis, and you can be excited about what Kermit Davis appears to be doing with the basketball program without demeaning Andy Kennedy. That is possible. You can't take Andy Kennedy just the last 2 years, the last year, and say he was a disaster. No, he wasn't. He came into a program that was a disaster, coaching in a dump of a facility. And go, I was in Tad Smith the other day. Caroline was at the Rebelette intensive camp, which they did at Tad Smith Coliseum. Walk in Tad Smith sometime. Get in there. Walk in the bottom of it. Walk around the guts of Tad Smith and ask yourself, how the hell did he get Chris Warren to come here?
Tariqo White came in that building.
He got Tariqo White. He got Murphy Holloway to come twice. How do you do that? I mean, You can look at this in different ways. I mean, and at the
I
same
mean, look, Terrence Henry was a top 100 kid. He never panned out. But
yeah, Terrence Henry could have gone to LSU. They wanted him.
Reggie was Reggie, so whatever. But
Reggie probably never noticed the building.
Yeah.
But you can look at it that way and then also say, which I've said.
It's time to go.
It was time to make a change.
Yeah.
Andy was burned out. I'll get to something along those lines in a future thought. It was time for something fresh. Kermit Davis has brought freshness and energy and enthusiasm to a program that needed it. But you can also then acknowledge, but hey, he's never going to have to battle the Tad Smith thing. Kennedy did. And if you don't think that wore him out over 10 years, you're out of your mind. We already talked about the Bianco thing. Now that Mississippi State is out of the College World Series and some of the emotion wears off, you have to acknowledge that the Bianco debate has nuance. Those of you who have been calling for his head based on some postseason issues, you're crazy. And those who blindly defend Bianco and say there's nothing there, you're every bit as wrong. There's something there, but it's not to the point where pulling the plug on the program would make sense. I promise you, if Ole Miss announced today that they were firing Mike Bianco, Lamonis, is that his name?
Yeah.
No one would be happier on the face of the planet than Chris Lamonis.
I mean, unless Dan McDonald took the job. And then
I don't think Dan would take it after Mike got fired. I think.
I mean, Dan versus Chris in Mississippi, we can do that now.
We could. Number five, I'm tired of people telling me that the obsession, the Mississippi State Ole Miss obsession is one way. It's two way. It's stronger in Starkville than it is in Oxford, but it's strong in Oxford too. It's there.
Let me ask this. Is it stronger? Okay, sorry. Is it stronger in Oxford than it typically would be because of the level of antagonism coming from the other side?
Probably. But it's still strong. And the antagonism thing that got ratcheted up over the last 10 years, I've witnessed it. Ole Miss took its fair share of shots, too.
They retaliated when it would have been easy just to stop.
Yeah, and the NCAA thing, I mean, that's a result of a handful of people. I don't know that that's an institutional thing.
Okay, yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I get it.
And it's creating this institutional animosity that is becoming obsessive both ways.
Still think Matt and Joe try to temper it now.
I think so. I'll be curious to see like what Lamonis says.
How people he has try no to, experience whatsoever in this. None.
I don't think he'll ratchet it up at all.
I mean, somebody told me he was born in Mississippi, but okay, whatever.
It's going to be a challenge for Kermit Davis. Because he has strong Mississippi State ties, and he does desperately want to win that game.
And he mentioned it in his introduction.
Because they screwed him. They lied to him in a coaching search. Bottom line. He's not going to use those words. That's what happened. They hired Rick Ray instead of Kermit. That didn't work out. He gets the last laugh, but he wants to beat them badly. And so it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, I do chuckle at the Ole Miss fan that goes, well, you know, he's got some state ties. I worry about him in that game. No. He'll be geeked up. You might worry about him in the game following state for what they expend in energy. But
yeah, me, and I'm sure if Kermit hears this, he will tell me I'm wrong. And maybe I'll be proven wrong. I'm willing to – you know this, Chase. We've been together for a while.
Uh-huh.
I'm willing to admit I'm wrong. But me – give me Ole Miss at home over Mississippi State with Kermit Davis the coach, and then give me the next opponent, and I'll lay points 3 days later.
Okay.
Until I'm proven wrong. Number six, I noticed this on message boards. If this applies to you and you feel your face burning, I'm probably talking about you. There are people who literally will blindly support something because they have access. If you're defending Matt Insull, 1-15 in year five, you're defending your access. 1-15 in year five. Well, he had players who got pregnant. Maybe he needs to recruit different kinds of players. Players get hurt. Yeah, injuries happen in sports. That excuse was not given to people who did not give you that access. Andy Kennedy says hello. Is that fair?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know of an argument that Matt's program was trending in any positive direction.
It was trending
all.
In a very negative direction.
I mean, they had a mediocre year four, but then it fell off a cliff in year five.
Number seven, Rivals five-star challenges this week. There aren't a whole lot of Ole Miss targets there. Handful, but right. not many.
Yeah.
Ole Miss has landed a lot of recruits. They're mostly kind of three-star sort of players. Two things in the same point. One, it's strong, strong, strong recruiting strategy to get guys locked up early. And two, for the people who are asking, where are the five stars? This is that get real moment that people at Ole Miss cringe when I say this. This is what a clean program looks like in this league. In a league where there's a lot of dirt, lots of dirt, and where eventually you have to get dirty, this is what clean looks like. And if you want to pin that on Matt Luke, you're absolutely wrong. This was going to be the challenge for whoever got that job. Number eight, along those same lines, there's a lot of excitement about basketball recruiting. It's one of the things I'm really interested in over the next 24-ish months. You're probably cringing as to where I'm going here.
I don't know where you're going, so.
Visits are good. Visits do not equate signed national letters of intent. At some point, as it pertains to going after the high-level basketball player, the rubber's going to have to meet the road. Or else there might be some of the same frustration inside the new building that there was once in the old building. Number nine, Cincinnati's a really underrated city. The restaurants in the Over the Rhine area, really impressive. Great America Ballpark, really cool. If you have a trip and you're, it's not that terrible of a drive. It's a little long. It's about an hour long.
Okay.
But you have a 3 or 4 day weekend, not the worst place to go.
Cincinnati.
I was blown away, really. Kind of impressed. And then number 10, this is a lesson to myself. And if you're a dad out there, Chase.
Yeah. What do you got?
Here's what I learned about. I always take these trips with Carson. And we plan all this stuff.
Yeah, you've been doing this a good 5 years now.
Yeah,
probably.
And I'll do it until he won't do it anymore because I think it's important. And I enjoy it more than he does.
Think so?
Yeah, oh sure. And we go to games and we go to museums and we do all that stuff. You know what kids want? They want your time.
Okay.
Carson's highlight of this trip, we stayed at a Homewood Suites, about half a mile from the ballpark. One of the great things about Cincinnati is you can walk. We caught one Uber because it was raining. Otherwise, we walked.
Okay.
Never. I parked my car and never took it out again until we left. There was a pool table. It was a Homewood Suites that shared
a Hilton, Hampton Inn.
A Hampton Inn.
I've seen them all. Yeah, I stayed in one in Houston last year for that.
And big hotel, had a lot of amenities, didn't have a swimming pool. We thought it had a swimming pool. It didn't. Had a pool table. We played pool probably a total of 6 hours.
Really?
It was easily, no question, the highlight of his trip, which was a reminder to me. So if you're out there, don't do the whole thing of, oh, you're a great dad. No, I'm not. I'm just a dad. I'm not a great dad. I'm not a model dad. No, I'm not. Stop. But it was a reminder. If that's a free lesson that I can give you, the kids want, they want your time.
Yeah, you don't have to have plan. I mean, I had a smaller version of this weekend because I had Carly Ann for the first time multi-nights in a row by myself.
Yes.
Kara was in the state tennis tournament in Jackson over the weekend. So I had Carly Ann from Friday, pretty much when I picked her up for daycare, Friday through Sunday afternoon. And yeah, you realize when you're just doing it alone for multiple days that you don't have to spend 9 hours at the park. You don't have to do this or that. It's just find some activities.
Yes.
Just do things. I mean, most of the time they'll bring you a coloring book or something. Sit down at the table and color a page and let that be an hour of your time. You know, I mean, that was
really doesn't change that much. Yeah. Just the attention spans and
yeah, well, it's like last night. She's got this little table in like kind of next to our breakfast table or whatever in the little side area of the kitchen, and that's what I had sat down with her or whatever, and there was a color book sitting there, so I just like grabbed a marker and I was just kind of doodling. I'm the worst color in the world or whatever, but I got up, and when I did, like, in her broken English, she kept yelling sit, 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 more like, hey, come back. And I was like, this is kind of the thing, like, it's just do something, it doesn't matter what it is, but just something
together
with your day. Yeah. Now don't take my marker, I'll scream if you take mine, don't hand me yours, but just sit there and follow my rules to color that horse and that dog on that page, and we'll move on. So
that's Tim Thoughts, brought to you by Harry Alexander. Harry is an Oxford-based REMAX Legacy Realty agent. He's been great to me all these years. No one knows the residential and condo market better than Harry. Go to his site, harryalexander.com. Click on the Properties and Neighborhoods tab. Filter through by what you are looking for, and then send him an email. He'll take care of the rest in what is a pretty interesting real estate market here in the Oxford area. It's ha@harryalexander.com.
Really appreciate Mike DeTA's time. Again, we will hopefully get him on a good bit as football does get cranked up. But that was a good little appetizer there to discuss some of the key points coming. Mike told you a lot if you were listening.
If you were listening, Mike told you a whole lot.
Yeah. So
he really told you two things, which we've told you before. This is going to come down to, can you establish a running game? And can you the part of this, everyone focuses on linebacker play, and I do too. But man, can you get to the quarterback? Because if you can't, those linebackers are really going to get exposed.
Can you disrupt offensive flow and create some turnovers?
And when you have third and one, can you get that yard that keeps the defense off the field?
Yeah.
That extends your possession?
Because he talked about 90 yards for Scotty Phillips and company. That also, I told Neil, that also means 40 yards in the fourth quarter when you need it. There's some situational to that, so. We'll see. Plenty of time to talk about it as we move forward. Again, podcast tomorrow will be remote, but you will get one. Could have a guest as well. We're working on that as we speak. So thanks to Mike. Talk to you tomorrow.